We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really...
Now we shine your shoes like a looking glass. When that water hit them shoes, it roll right off. Shine. Now we shine that shoe like a looking glass, make a fly do that natural light shine. Now we get them shoe like a looking glass, the water hit them, they're gonna roll right off, shine. Now we hit them shoes right on the lip when no.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Today is November 14th, 2010. Also, actually wanted to play the mountaintop speech. For some reason, the audio files got switched. Who knows? Anyway, let's just start the show early. Okay. Welcome to BTR. I'm your host, Dawid Yaqub Maccabeus. You're listening to Signs and Wonders. I am coming to you live from Sweden, and like I said before, today is November 14th, 2010. Today's broadcast is entitled, Yahushua the Messiah. But before I speak, I want to let you know that if you want to call in, the number is 1-346-826-9484. That's 1-346-826-9484. I should be taking calls towards the end of the show. Hopefully I have enough time to do that. And I'm just making sure everything's on. And I opened up the chat, so the chat's open. So just making sure that I have all my everything ready. Okay, now, before I begin, I'd like to open up in a word of prayer. And first, I would like to say thank you, Father. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak this message. Thank you for allowing me to see this day, Heavenly Father. I thank you for keeping a humble heart within my chest. I thank you for just allowing me to be the man that I grown to become. Thank you for my children and all things that are wonderful in life, because they would not be wonderful without your protection and guidance. Heavenly Father, this broadcast is very important, and I pray that you opened the ears to those that need to hear it. I humbly pray in the name of your gift, your love, the most honorable name, Yahushua, the Messiah. Hallelujah. 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 Okay. Now I got my energy. All right. So, let's see. This is going to be not really that much different, but there's a lot of material that I'm trying to cover today. And this is called Yahushua the Messiah. And I was going to do a broadcast on the Egyptian religion. And when I started to write the script for that broadcast, I realized that there's something that I need to cover prior, because I don't want people to think that I'm anti-Christian in the sense that I am like a Christian basher. And I know I relayed that message a lot on the show, but I want to make sure that this show really shows why I think the way I think, and why I feel the way I feel about Christians. And hopefully after this show, it explains that. Then I can, you know, do other shows freely without having that in my mind, that thinking that, oh, these people think I actually hate Christians, because I don't hate Christians. I used to be a Christian. I just want, you know, them to wake up. Like I did. Now, to start this program, I broke it up into sections. This section is called nothing new under the sun. Okay? Nothing new under the sun. First of all, I'd like to welcome my brothers and sisters and friends and enemies. The reason why I entitled this section Nothing New Under the Sun is because the fact remains that since the Messiah, Yahushua, there has always been these spirit. It's like, you know, these spirits. It's this spirit of discord, this spirit of confusion. This spirit of confusion that will constantly test the faith and patience of Yah's chosen. Today, I would like to discuss the roots of this madness and hope to give you a better understanding about where it comes from. So, let's begin with a little history. 4th century, 325 AD. Exactly 1,686 years ago. At this time, there was a political event called the First Council of Nicaea. So, what was this council? Here is a quick overview. Now, this Council of Nicaea, I know it's pretty, people know pretty much about it right now. But do you really know what it was about? Do you really understand what this was? After today, you will know everything about this council. Because I found some things, I did some research, and it might surprise you. And it might not. Anyway, okay, the Council of Nicaea, 325 AD. Now, here it reads, a quick overview. It says, Constantine the Great summoned the bishops of the Christian Church of Nicaea to address divisions in the church. The First Council of Nicaea was a council of Christian bishops convened in Nicaea in the Bithynia, which is present-day Turkey, by the Roman Emperor Constantine Constantine I, in AD 325. The council was the first effort to attain consensus in church through an assembly representing all of Christendom. Its main accomplishment was settlement of the Christological issues of the relationship of Jesus to God the Father. Note, this is a note. Before this, the name was Yahushua. Okay, the reason why it was Yahushua is because it came from a Hebraic Afro-Asiatic language. Yeah, I know I relayed that point before, but for those of you that are new to listening to this, understand that the name was Yahushua because it comes from a Hebraic Afro-Asiatic language. Okay? Now, the council did not create the doctrine, it goes on to read, of the deity of Christ, but it did settle to some degree the debate within the early Christian communities regarding the divinity of Christ. This idea of the divinity of Christ with the idea of Christ as a messenger for the one God, then they have in quotes, the Father, had long existed in various parts of the Roman Empire. The divinity of Christ had been widely endorsed by the Christendom community in the otherwise pagan city of Rome. The council affirmed and defined what is believed to be the teaching of the apostle regarding who Christ is, that Christ is the one true God and deity with the Father. Okay, now, that last part is important, because at this time, the apostles were still very influential, okay, when it says, regarding the apostles. Christians were being persecuted like crazy. You had the Hebrew Christians and the Jewish revolts going on. Nero destroyed the Second Temple, right? The King Herod lineage and the Biuthius high priest were denying the Messiah. We have the Colosseum being built to kill anyone that claims to be a Christian. So when they say, when it reads, the council affirmed and defined what it believes to be the teachings of the apostle about who Christ is, all right? In other words, they are saying this is straight from the words of Yahushua to the apostles, because no one gets any purer than that, okay? Now, here is another point to think about the Christians, the Hebrew Christians. The Christians at this time were extremely different from the so-called Christians today. They were named Christians by the Greeks, which comes from the word Christos, which means anointed one, or ointment. Okay, anointed means ointment, and it means to apply oil to the skin. The Greeks used this word without understanding. Okay, they used it as ridicule. But if you apply it to the Hebrew meaning, it does mean the Messiah. Okay, the only place in the Bible, I found this out, the only place that you find the word Messiah in the Bible is in Daniel 9. And it's only used two times in the whole Bible. Messiah is only used two times in the whole Bible. And those verses are 24 and 25 of Messiah. Now, it talks about, this is what's really interesting. This talks about the event in which the word was invented. Okay, meaning like 24:25 speaks about the time when Messiah is supposed to arrive, and it's based on the time when the word was invented. Okay, so the Greeks did not know anything about the Messiah. They didn't read the book of Daniel. Okay, they were pagans. So, but they were calling him the Anointed One as a joke. And to them, anointed means rubbing your body with oil, okay? But to the Hebrews, okay? The Hebrew Israelites used the word anointed in reference to being clean or washed to become fresh. And they also used the word anointed to welcome a new king or prophet. The new king or prophet was anointed by the Spirit of the Most High. All right? So the early Christians before 325 AD were true to this word anointed because they were chosen by the Most High. All right? So I was looking for, this word Christian, where does it come from? You know, and I thought that maybe it was something that's going to be, I was going to find something horrible. But I didn't find anything horrible. I found something that was like, okay, it's actually, it's appropriate. All right. Now, understand, when I complain about Christianity, I'm not talking about the root, okay? I am talking about the corruption. The group that I'm speaking about were, the corrupted group are the Catholics, you know, but we'll discuss that later. But the root that I'm speaking about, the Hebrew Christians, now, actually, who were they? Who were these Hebrew Christians? Who were the Hebrew anointed ones? Okay? And here's something I got as a quick explanation. It says, they were early Christians who maintained Hebrew religious practices from the period of the inception of Christianity until approximately the 5th century. They were associated with the Hebrew Christian gospel. Now, I have that in quotes. Here is what this article does not mention. Because I'm going to read the rest of the article, but I want to put this break in here real quick. The Hebrew Christians, okay, were forced to migrate to the west coast of the west coast and the southern parts of Africa. the 5th century, understand, this is what's going on now. In the 5th century, in the 5th century, when Roman Christianity became the dominant religion, it wasn't quite the Holy Roman Empire yet, right? But the Romanized Christianity became the dominant religion, right? So what happens is the Hebrews, they left this area of Judea. And the reason why they left, because the Romans didn't tolerate any other views except that of Rome. Now, the question you have to ask is, so where is the safest place for the Hebrew to go? If you were Hebrew, would you go north where it's cold and, still a part of the Roman Empire? Or would you go south where it's warm, out of the reach of Rome? Okay? Where would you go? Of course you go south. Now, when the Hebrews escaped this threat, the threat of the Romans, right? They were usurped and destroyed by the rise of this other religion called Islam. And this happened in the 7th century, okay? The 600s, 7th century. And they had a policy which said you had to convert or die. And if that did not destroy the Hebrew Israelites, they had to deal with something else. Another decree. And this decree came in 1452 by the Catholic Church, which is called the slave trade. You know, so if you need an explanation on why I know that the African Americans and any other Hebrew that was enslaved are not the so-called blacks, but are the Hebrew Israelites, then look no further than to this explanation. When it's done, rewind it, play it again, and understand. Okay, now let me get back to this explanation of the Hebrew Israelites. Now, this article reads, it says, Alistair McGrath, former professor of historical theology at the University of Oxford, claims that the first century Hebrew Christians were totally faithful religious Jews, okay, or better stated, religious Hebrews. They only differ from other contemporary Jews in their acceptance of Yahushua as the Messiah. I added that, of course. However, as Christianity grew throughout the Gentile world, Christians were cut off from their Hebrew roots. Okay? I like how this article is written because it says, the Gentile world, Christians were cut off from their Hebrew roots. I didn't add that Hebrew roots. Okay? Now, pay attention to this last part. This is where it gets interesting. Now, it says, Hebrew Christianity fell into decline, probably due to the early persecution of the sect by the Jerusalem Temple Authority, followed by the Jewish-Roman War, 66 to 135 AD, and then the growing anti-Judaism, perhaps best personified by Mercion in the 2nd century, and with more than a little help from the Roman Emperor Constantine in the 4th century. It faded quietly into the background. It was dominated by Gentile-based Christianity, which became the official religion of the Roman Empire, and which took control of sites in the Holy Land, such as the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and the Synagogue. Okay? So basically, they're telling you right there that the Hebrew Christians were wiped out. So any remnants of the true core of Christianity was destroyed 1,686 years ago. So now you have 1,686 years of corruption. And then you wonder why I am against Christianity. When no one even knows this information, No one even bothers to understand it. Oh, it gets much better. It gets much better. Okay. Why did I go over this? Huh? Well, the first council of Nicaea, right? The first council of Nicaea needs to be dissected and to be understood onto how the control took place and what was the effects of this control. I mean, we know what the effects was with his Catholicism, but do we know the real picture, the wider picture? Okay? And now, because I want to lay the foundation for understanding on why this council happened and who was the instigators of it, right? I first want to highlight four major players. Okay, I need to highlight some players here in order to get the explanation. Now, I will explain these people in detail later, but I'm going to name them off. Okay, number one, of course, is Roman Empire, Constantine. Then we have a priest named Arius. Then we have a bishop named, I think his name is Eusebius. And then we have a bishop named Melatine. Okay. Now, those are the first four people. Now we have a deeper, more sinister group of players. Now, these three are as follows. We have Titus Flavius Clemente, a.k.a. Clemente of Alexandria. Then we have Lucian of Antioch. And last but not least, we have a man by the name of Origen. Get that name? Origen. Okay. So, let's start with Origen. Origen. Who is Origen? Origen. Greek, his name is Origen Adnatius, 185 to 254 AD, was an early Christian scholar and theologian, and one of the most distinguished writers of the early Christian church. Despite not being considered a church father by most Christians who recognize this distinction, according to tradition, he is held to have been an Egyptian who taught in Alexandria, reviving the catechetical school of Alexandria, where Clemente of Alexandria had taught. The patriarch of Alexandria at first supported Origen, but later expelled him for being ordained without a patriarch's permission. He relocated to Caesarea Maximia, and died there after being tortured during persecution. Boy, they like killing people. They be torturing people like crazy. Okay, using his knowledge of Hebrew, he produced the Hexapala and a corrected Septuagint. Okay, I have a Septuagint actually. He wrote commentaries on most of the books of the Bible, and the Principalis on First Principles. He articulated one of the first philosophical expositions of Christian doctrine. He interpreted scriptures allegorically and developed certain doctrines with similarity to the Neo-Pythagorean and Neo-Platonist. Though, like Platonius, he wrote that the soul passes through succession stages for incarnation before eventually reaching God. All right, people, keep up with me now. Stay with me. You know, I have a point to all this, okay? I have a point. He imagined even demons being reunited with God. For Origen, God was the first principle and Christ the Logos who submitted to him. His views of the heretical structure and the hierarchical structure in the Trinity, the temporality or matter, the fabulous persistence of souls, and the monstrous, and this is quotes, the monstrous restoration which followed from it, were declared Euphemia in the 6th century. Okay, now what is this word euphemia? All right, so what is euphemia? Euphemia, sometimes dedicated, in Greek it says sometimes dedicated, especially dedicated to evil. Then it goes for one, set upon, offer as a votive gift. Y'all know what that means. It originally meant something left up, okay, left up by offerings to the gods. It later means, okay, they have like another meaning. It says to be formally set apart, banished, exiled, excommunicated, denounced, sometimes accused of a, sometimes accused of, you know. So basically, 300 years after his death, the church banished his teachings because they were dedicated to evil. This is the founding father of the church. Now, what is the etymology of the name Origen? His Greek name Origen probably means child of Horus, from Horus and born. His nickname or cognomen Andamatius derives from Greek, which means uncorrigible or unbreakable. Okay, so he was the uncorrigible, unbreakable child of Horus. The origin, unbreakable child of Horus. Okay, now I'm not going to read all of his thing, but to paraphrase it, it says most of the understanding of Lucifer or Satan derives from origin. Now, he was a little crazy. It says he actually castrated himself because he was obsessed with the Bible. You know, certain doctrines. So he's like, oh, I have to castrate myself. And he was more of an occultic, okay, he was a cultist than a Christian theologist. Okay, this is my opinion. He was more into the occult than anything. But his influence is key. Now, the next individual is Titus Flavius Clemente. All right? Who is he? Titus Flavius Clemente. He lived 150 to 215. Known as Clemente of Alexandria to distinguish him from Clemente of Rome. Was a Christian theologian and head of the noted catechetical school of Alexandria. Now, this school of Alexandria, it's still around today. Still around today. And it started back in 200. What was this school? It's spitting out demons left and right. Okay, Clemente is best remembered as the teacher of Origen. All right? Now it says, he united Greek philosophy traditions with Christian doctrine and valued Gnostics that the communion for all people could be held by common Christians, apparently chosen by God. Okay? Now, let that sink in a little bit. Okay? He was uniting the pagan religions even before 325 BC. Though he constantly opposes the concept of Gnostics as defined by Gnostics, he uses the term Gnostic for Christians who had attained the deeper teaching of the Logos. He developed a Christian Platonism. He presented the goal of Christians' life as deification, identified both as Platonism, assimilation into God, and the biblical imitation of God. Like Origen, he arose from Alexander's catechetical school and was well versed in pagan literature. Origen succeeded Clemente as head of the school. So, are you starting to get the picture now? Did you hear Yahushua mentioned in there anywhere? Did you hear Ten Commandments, anything? No, nothing. Now we got another guy. His name is Lucian. Now Lucian, this guy is a little bit hard to pinpoint. Okay, Lucian is also commonly credited with the critical recension of the text of the Septuagint in the Greek New Testament, which was later used by Chrysostom and later Greek fathers, and which lies at the basis of the textual Receptus. Germain mentioned that copies were known in his day as Expletoria Lucia, but in other places he speaks rather despairingly of the text of Lucian. in the absence of the definition information, it is impossible to decide the merits of his critical labor. He believed in the literal sense of the biblical text and this laid stories on the need for textual accuracy. He undertook to revise the Septuagint based on the original Hebrew. So now here you have the first guy, Origen, revised the Septuagint, and now this guy is revising it. Okay, now you have two revisions now. Okay, now from this we can actually see where all this corruption and these new additions in the Bible come from. Okay, these church fathers are taking upon themselves to revive the word of the Most High. All right, now Lucian founded a college of Antioch which strove to counteract the dangerous ecclesiastical alliances between Rome and Alexandria. He strove to exalt traditions and teach Christianity mixed with pagan philosophy. Historians often wrongly attribute the Arian heresy to Lucian, since Arian was his former student. However, Arian and his heretical teachings that Jesus Christ was a created being is stoutly refuted by this man. It's refuted by his former teacher. Now, his creed sects, whose creed set forth all these members of the Godhead and extract scriptural grounds. He is sometimes called the Judaizer because he taught the Ten Commandments, including the seventh-day Sabbath, which was generally kept during the Roman in Alexandria at this time. Now, I'm not going to read any of that more. Okay, now, please stay with me, okay? This is very important to lay this out because these guys are considered the church fathers, the root of the Catholic Church. Now, I'm going to get to the Messiah. Okay, I'm going to get to the Messiah. But first, these fools started the doctrine, you know, that says Yah and Yahushua are not one. And today, you know, this doctrine is based on, you know, it's based on the so-called founding fathers. You know, so when you're out there saying, like, you know, Jesus is not God, you understand, this is where it comes from, okay? It's seeds planted, and you're just eating them up. Okay, now, Eusebius of Caesarea, this is another guy. He's 263 to 339 A.D. Now, as you see, we're getting closer to the Council of Nicaea, because this guy died in 339. This guy's going to have a huge influence, okay? Now, here's what it says about him. Hold on. Eusebius, these names are crazy, of Caesarea, called Eusebius Pompili, became the bishop of Caesarea in Palestine about the year 314. Eusebius, historians, excated and polemistic, is one of the more removed church fathers. He, Pamplius, was a scholar of the biblical canon. He wrote demonstrations of gospel, preparations for the gospel, and on discrepancies between gospel studies of the biblical text. As father or church history, he produced the ecclesiastical histories on the life of Pamplius, the chronicle on the martyrs. Let me try to rush through this. Okay, now, for a demonic point of view, Eusebius stands entirely upon the shoulders of Origen. Like Origen, he started from the fundamental thought of the absolute sovereignty monarchy of God. God is the cause of all beings, but he is not merely a cause. In him, everything good is included. From him, all life originated, and he is the source of all virtue. See, that sounds pretty good, right? God sent Christ into the world that it may partake of blessings, including the essence of God. Christ is God and is a ray of the eternal light. But the figure of the ray is so limited by Eusebius that he expressed distinguishers. The Son, as a distinct from Father as a ray, is also distinct from its own source, the Son. See, he was actually, basically what he was saying, he was edifying Christ and edifying, you know, saying edifying God, edifying Christ. But when he, when you asked him, you know, are they one? He said, no, he's basically just like a ray, you know, just one ray in the sun, you know. Okay, now we finally get to this guy named, by name was Melithia. Now, the Council of Nicaea at 325 attempted to create peace with Melithia. Melithia was allowed to remain bishop, but was no longer to ordain bishop outside his religion. The bishops he had already ordained were accepted under certain restrictions, and he had to reordain. Melithia's death followed soon after the council, and and in order to bring unity, proved unsuccessful. Okay, basically, this is another guy, and he was causing so much hell that the council had to be called because this guy had a sect that was running around. All right, now, let's get to Adrian, the Adrian controversy, okay? Arian controversy. Not Arian like as in Adolf Hitler Arian, but Arian, spelled A-R-I-A-N. Now, Arian is notably primary because of his role in the Arian controversy, a great 4th century theological conflict that rocked the Christian world and led to the calling of the first ecumenical council of the church. Ecumenical. Okay, controversy centered upon the name of the Son of God and his precise relationship to God the Father. Here it says, Origen and Arius. Like many 3rd century Christian scholars, Arius was influenced by the writings of Origen. Okay? And regarding to the first theologians of Christianity, however, while he drew support from Origen's theory on the Logos, the two did not agree on everything. Arius clearly argued that there was a time when the Son did not exist, meaning the Son, Yahushua, and that the Logos had a beginning, but by way of contrast, Origen taught that the relation of the Son and the Father had no beginning. Arius objected to Origen's doctrine, complaining about it in his letter to Eusebius, but he also studied under Lucian. Nevertheless, despite disagreeing with Origen on this point, Arius found it solace in his writings and used expressions that favored Arius' contention that the Logos was of a different substance from the Father and owed his existence to his Father's will. However, because Origen's theological speculations were often pre-offered to stimulate further inquiries rather than to put an end to any further dispute, both Arius and his opponents were able to invoke the authority of this revered. At this time, theologians during their debate. Okay, I don't know why I read all that. I should have just explained it. Basically, it's just saying that Origen and Arius conflicted a little bit on certain things, but at the end of the day, this guy was the founding root of the philosophy that Arian had. Arian, you know, he was extremely influential at this time. Now, what they have, the core of this, okay, the root, okay, now, if Origen, a.k.a. child of Horus, is the root, right, then here is the core. It's called Christianity and Platonism. It's the mixture. It's like, you know, Plato, right? Now, many Western churchmen, include Augustus of Hippo, have been influenced by Platonism. Plato has influenced Christianity through Clemente Alexandria and Origen. Okay? Now, I'm not going to read. I'm going to paraphrase this. This is basically telling us that they got their, the core of their belief came from that of Platonism. Okay? Here's a part that says, Platonism notions are now permanent elements of Catholic and Protestant Christianity. Platonism also influenced both Eastern and Western mysticism. Meanwhile, Platonism influenced various philosophers. While Aristotle became more influential than Plato in the 13th century, St. Thomas Aquinas' philosophy was still in certain respect fundamental, Platonic. With the Renaissance, scholars became more interested in Plato himself. In the 16th and 17th century, 19th century, Plato's ideas influenced many religious thinkers, Orthodox Protestants, and continental Europe. However, this trust natural reasons and have often been critical of Platonism, because he started talking about natural reason, and started to influence atheism. So then they had to separate themselves, or they would be contradictory. Now, what we have here, have you ever heard of something called the Kabbalah? Or how about the occult group called Hermetics? Have you ever heard of John Dee's or Sir Francis Bacon? Remember last week when I spoke about the Founding Fathers? Well, their core belief is based also on Platonism. You see, all this leads back to itself. It all leads back to itself. Okay, now, here's what we came to this point. The First Council of Nicaea, okay? In the States, in 325 AD, Arius the priest started a major conflict among the Christians. At this time, you had many different sects. You had the Hebrew Christians. This consisted of the core, okay? This was Yahushua being the head, of course. And then you had the apostles, okay? But the apostles had different groups. They consist of the Cerinthians, the Ebionites, the Elasiites, the Essenes, the Nazarenes, the Nazarenes, and that's it. These were the core truth. Okay. Now, these individuals received the word straight from the Messiah and his apostles. Okay. This is one group. Then you had the other Christians, the ones that converted into the faith. Okay, but they still held on to their pagan beliefs as well. And last but not least, we just have the pagans. And the pagans, they had their own issues. So we had all these people at this time. Now, when Arian came on the scene, he actually divided all these groups further. And since most of them were not hardcore Hebraic Christians, they fell for this new philosophy called Arianism. And because most of these new Christians did not have the root of the Messiah, conflict started rising all over the Roman Empire, and it got so bad that Emperor Constantine had to get involved. Okay? So you understand there's a root to this. There's a root to this. And history to me is exciting, but most people, they find it boring, you know? Now, why Emperor Constantine was so special, okay, to this conflict is because he actually was kind to Christians. This is even before 325 Council of Nicaea. Now, this stems from a dream, or it was a vision he had. Now, he dreamt that a spirit came to him and gave him a special symbol. And if he placed it on his shield, if he wore the signet, it would protect him. And it guaranteed to win in battle. Now, this battle was called the Battle of Milvian. It was called the Milvian Bridge of 312 AD. So he followed the instructions and won. The symbol is now used as the Christian cross. The deception of the symbol is like it's like a letter P, and then you have the letter X on the top, okay? And when they call it the Chi Rio, I think it's like C-H-I Rio. Now, they say that this was a vision from the Most High Yah, Yahuwah. But when you have the whole nation using graven images, all right, you got to ask yourself, is this a representation of Yahushua? Okay? And you have to think twice about that. So, but nevertheless, out of this, he started to notice the Christian God. Now, Emperor Constantine, he was a pagan worshiper, and the god he worshiped was Sol, it was called Sol Invictus. He followed the sun god. But after the battle of Milvian, of the Milvian Bridge, he took notice of the Most High. So, now, we fast forward to 325 AD. Arius is sowing discord. War starts to break out, and Arianism has some powerful followers. Constantine's sister is married to the emperor. His name is Licinius. He is actually friends with Eubius. Eubius is one of the church fathers, and he's actually a pupil of Orion. You know, he was Orion, the son of Horus. Okay, so now Arius has all this power behind him, and he starts to write letters to all the bishops, leaders, and that are in the Christian faith. And what he's saying is that the Yahushua is not the son of the Most High, that he's not really divine, and he's just a name. So basically, he has the spirit of the Antichrist, okay? And this is what we see today, this spirit. Okay, so after a few months or so, people start to lose it. The Roman Empire has two rulers at this time. One of these emperors, Lysias, is, and the other is Constantine, okay? Now, because the conflict breaks out between the two emperors, Constantine defeats Lysias, he puts him to death, and becomes the sole emperor of Rome. Now, also, at this time, Arius is gaining more power, and now is trying to pass a decree that Yahushua is not Messiah. Now, he said he's not the Messiah, and he doesn't embody the Most High. Okay, so you know that his doctrine. Now, to make a long story short, Constantine gets involved with the First Council of Nicaea and invites all of the priests and bishops throughout the Holy Roman Empire. And another note you have to understand is that the reason why Licinius died is because the conflict actually got him into the battle, and they influenced him, and then it was destroying Rome. Okay, so emperor, he called the Council of Nicaea, 325 AD. All right, now this is setting it up. Now, okay, so finally we're here. Okay, now we're at this point. Okay, the council is called, and now here's the thing. If Arius is able to make this decree, right, it would be illegal to say Yahushua was the Messiah. And most likely all Christians that believe this will be put to death. And then they would purge out, you know, all of that Christian doctrine until the only thing left is Arianism. And Arianism would be the standard Christianity. Okay? Now you have this Matthian, the bishop, who ordained Arius. And you have this sect called Matthians. Okay? So all these individuals are on the side of Arius, because if they win this, they become numero uno. Okay? And now at this meeting, you also have Eubius, a church father. And this is the guy that's trying to unite paganism and Christianity. So, you know, all this is going on. You have the priest, the new pagan Christians, and of course you have the Hebrew Christians. And then debate starts. And they said, now on this agenda, there's the Arian question regarding the relationship between God and the Father. They have the date celebrating the Easter observation, and also this is how you get Christ date turned into Christmas and Easter and all this stuff. Then you have the Methusian skirmishes. This is the guy that was out there causing problems, and he wanted to convert people into the pagan Christian religion. All right? And then they have the validity of the baptism, different baptisms. Okay? Now, since the Arian theology was the most important, they had to lay ground rules, okay? Now, they said that they could use scriptures, but philosophy or emotions were not allowed, just the word. These are some ground rules. Now, the people that were at this meeting on the Hebrew Christian side, these people were jacked up. I mean, they were jacked. Okay, they had missing eyes, lost limbs, they were burnt, okay? They had missing teeth. I mean, these brothers, they were through. And the reason why is because at this time there was persecution, okay? At this time, you die for your faith. So when Arian brought forth this challenge to them, he better have brought his game plan, all right? Because he was going against some serious brothers at this time. One of the guys, Eusebius, wrote a quote. He was like, he was moved by seeing these people. He was moved because they were just, you know, they were just a picture of faith, you know? All these priests are just jacked up. But they brought forth this vote, okay? Now, Arius, of course, a.k.a. Lucifer, he lost his battle, okay, because what happened was when they voted on it, they said, look, if you're just using the word, then here we go. And they basically showed him where it was, you know, that Christ and the Messiah are one, and he is the Messiah, and they couldn't handle it, so they lost. And then what happened was this doctrine was thrown out. They did away with it. But, okay, now, Arius, a.k.a. Lucifer, he lost his battle, but he won the war. Because after this, the church was now reformed. It became the unified universal church and Catholic church. All the pagan holidays became merged. Popes are created. Books are hidden and rewritten and lost. The whole church becomes corrupt and eventually merges with Rome to become the Holy Roman Empire. And, as they say, the rest is history. Okay? The rest is history. Okay, now, how does this story relate to Yahushua? The point you should take from this is that even after the best that Lucifer can give, all his power, all his powerful bishops and emperors, all the propaganda that he was spitting out there, he could not defeat the truth. Okay? They just said, look, stick with the word. Stick with the word of Yah. If you can prove otherwise, then you have to do it with the word. And obviously they didn't. And I think you can see this two ways. You can say, you know, you can see this as a win, right? Or you can see this as a defeat. Because if you say, well, yeah, we won the fact that they, you know, accepted him as the Messiah, but we lost because now the whole church is unified and everything was changed anyway. But what I see this as, I see it as a testament to Yahushua. Okay? It's a testament. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break. Make sure that everything is playing fine. And I'll be right back. Okay?
We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now. Because I've been to the mountaintop. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life, longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Okay, I'm back. Man, I love hearing that. Look, I know Martin. I knew he was Boule, but, you know, that was one powerful speech. He knew he was going to die, too, boy. You hear his voice scream, "My eyes, I've seen the glory." I remember watching that when I was little, getting goosebumps. They don't show that no more. You notice they don't show Martin Luther King no more on TV? Well, I'm in Sweden now, so I guess they won't show it anyway. But I remember seeing that thing all the time. Anyway, let me get going because I ain't got much time. And hopefully I can take some calls. But this last section is powerful. My suggestion to those that are listening, just sitting here listening is nice, but when you download this, I want you to really do some research on what I say so you too can actually get a grasp on what's going on, because knowledge is power. I'm telling you, it's powerful. And once you start throwing this out there, people cannot get in your way about nothing, because they are scared that you will look it up and find out they are lying. I had one person dispute me. I wrote him an email back. He ain't wrote me back. I was like, well, okay. He was supposed to be some scholar or something. Anyway, so let me get to this. All right. Now, this next section is called The Birth of the Messiah. It's called The Birth of the Messiah. And also, one more thing. Go to my site, HebrewIsraelites.eu. I updated it. I have some pictures on there, and I have the Deuteronomy 28 quotes on there to actually show you where this matches in history. And the pictures match up the quotes, so you can actually visualize it. That's HebrewIsraelites.eu. Go there and check it out. And I will have this up on the site, too, so you can download it and look at it like I usually do with my blogs and radio shows. Okay, now, it was about 4 months ago, okay, I ran across a YouTube video, and it was this brother speaking about Paul and Yahushua. And once again, you know, like before, there was that one Jewish guy, you know, here we go. This guy was claiming that Paul and Yahushua are fake and not real, and on and on and on and on and on. Okay. Like always, I listened, and then I researched, and then I moved on. But the other day, I think it was last week, I was listening to Kofa come out from amongst her. I advise everybody to listen to this show because it's a really good show. It's like one of my favorite shows out there. Now, I was listening to Kofa, and I heard a brother call up, and it was, again, this spirit of deception. So this part of the study is focused on this. It's focused on this call inspired me to do this broadcast, actually. So that brother, you know, he should be thankful. Now, you probably heard of many atheists or non-messianic so-called Hebrews speak about how Jesus is a fraud because the line of David was cursed. They call it the curse of Taniah. Now, I was surprised when I found tons of articles written about this. You can actually place this term in the URL right now, the curse of Taniah, and blam, all day long. You get articles. So I thought, why do they ask a question that is so easily found? And why would you make a YouTube video that is there forever that shows how ignorant you are? If you take time and you have the faith and you truly seek out the words of the Most High, everything is revealed. So I'm not doing this for that fool. Okay? I'm doing this for someone that needs this message. Okay, now, the curse of Kaniah. It's actually Yakaniah, but I say Kaniah because you'll get to that point. Okay, now, what we have to do is you have to go to Jeremiah 22:24. All right? Now, as I live, saith the Most High, though Kaniah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were the signet upon my right hand, yet would I pluck thee hence, and I will give thee into the hand of them that seek thy life, and into the hand of them whose face thou fearest, even into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hand of the Chaldeans. And I will cast thee out, and thy mother that bare thee, into another country, where you were not born, and there shall you die. But to the land where unto thy desires to return, thither shall they not return. Now, break this down real quick. The reason why the curse of the curse of Kaniah, because this is where they refer us to, and most of these people actually the atheist and the non-believers in the Most High use this verse to say, oh, in the genealogy of Luke and Mark, it says that the line is cursed. So therefore, if he went through Mary or if he went through Matthew, then it means he didn't exist because it's cursed, and they don't understand. So let's break this down. Now, I want you to pay attention to this part. This is Jeremiah 22:28. It says, In this man, Kaniah, I despise. It says, these are questions now. Is this man, Kaniah, a despised broken idol? Is he a vessel wherein no pleasure? Question. Wherefore are they cast out, he and his seed, and are cast into the land which they know not? Now, these are questions. These aren't, these are questions. Now, question to you. How many have you heard of a remnant? All right. It says, Jeremiah 29, O earth, 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 hear the word of the Most High. Jeremiah 22:30. Thus saith the Most High, write ye this man childless, a man that shall not prosper in his day. For no man of his seed shall prosper sitting upon the throne of David and ruling any more in Judah. Okay. Now, this here is a prophecy. When it says, earth, 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 hear the word of the Most High. Pay attention. Three times, pay attention. Now, if you read the book of Kings and the book of Chronicles, we know that Kaniah did have children. And one of them was a man by the name of, Shelphel. I can't even pronounce that name. Shatella. This curse did fall on Shatella. He did not have any children, so him being the firstborn, the first in line to be king, was passed over. Okay? And hope you got that. The line did not go to the second born either. It went to Padiah. Okay? And Padiah had a son named Zerubbabel. All right? I say this to set this up. Okay? Now, Zerubbabel means the seed of Babel. Okay? Or means the seed of confusion. All right. Keep following me now. Okay. Now, the path to understanding scriptures is in the names. Everything we know, everything we want to know is placed in the names of the chosen of the Most High. This is why you have so many translations in different languages, because they know that the message was in the names. Now, here are a list of names that you should know, and we're going to break down. Okay, so here we have Kananiah, okay? In Hebrew, it's Yakanayawa, which means sustained. And it says, cause to continue or to be prolonged for an extended period or without interruption. Now, have you ever heard of the remnant? Sustained means the remnant, okay? And his father was Yahoyakim. And it says, Yahuwah will rise, the father of Yakaniah, okay? Now, Yakaniah's son was Shelethel. Okay, I actually got that name spelled right. Sometimes, you know, your brain gets blank. Okay, now Shelethel, it is, I have asked El. Now, listen very carefully. Shelethel, who died young, without children, has a name called I have asked El. He doesn't say I have asked Yah. He says I have asked El. He was, and the grandson of Yakaniah was Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel descended of Babel. And the third son, Padiah, his name means Yah has ransomed. Okay? Yah has ransomed. Now this is it's going to get interesting. It's going to get interesting. What does ransom mean? It means a means of deliverance or rescue from punishment for sin. The payment of a redemptive fine to deliver or redeem from punishment for sin. Okay, now, just from those names, you can put together the story if you are familiar with the argument. Okay, now, here's where the magic happens. Okay, now, I hope you're staying with me, because if you are, here comes a treat. I'm going to show you how you actually read Hebrew by using the names and telling a story by putting together a clue, you see, because it's all laid out for us. These names, Kananiah, Jehoiakim, Shelethel, Zerubbabel, Padiah, all this. And you know the story. You know the prophecy. It talks about, you know, he's going to be childless and everything else. Okay, let me get to the point. All right, now, here's how you break it down. You say, let's let the names speak for themselves. And it begins. Yah raised up Jehoiakim because he did evil in the sight of the Most High. Now, raised up, right? That means to uproot, get rid of. We have to think about that. Remember, you have the Europeans translating it, but in this sense, Jehoiakim, Yah raised up, means to get rid of. Okay, so let's start over. Yah raised up Jehoiakim because he did evil in the sight of the Most High, but he sustained Konaniah because of the covenant he made with the Israelites. Now, Shelel, gonna mess it up now. Now Shelel, okay, he now Shelel did evil. Okay, Shelel did evil in the sight of Yah because he asked El, a spirit, not Yah, to have a child. So Yah chose Padiah to be the seed, right? Because Yah has ransomed. He redeemed Padiah, delivered or rescued him from punishment, from sin. And the redemption was Zerubbabel, who built the second temple, but he was born in Babylon, which allowed the second, which allowed the seed of Babel, which is the seed of confusion, into Israel. And you can see from the name Zerubbabel, the king of Judah, born in the land of confusion. Now, you're going to have to listen to that again, because I don't have time to really go over it again. But you can, from the names, you really can break down what happened. You can break down that Padiah was ransomed. His name is named after the Most High, ransom. You can see that Kenaniah, sustained, means to a remnant, sustained. You can see that Shelethel, he was not Shelethelah, he was Shelethel, meaning that he was praying to a spirit. So the Most High said, you will not have a seed. Because he said, we can't have, keep having these evil kings on the seed of Judah. So he took them out. All right, now let's keep going. And, you know, all this is going on. Everybody's confusing. Even today on YouTube in 2010, we got people using this verse and confused by it. Why are they confused? Because Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel. What does Zerubbabel mean? It means the seed of Babel. What is Babel? Confusion. Now, I could end this here, okay, and say, there you go. Take that. But I really want to bring this home. If these people that question the genealogy of Yahushua, okay, based on the book of Matthew and the book of Luke, read just a little bit further, they would not be confused, okay? Now, the very next chapter, chapter 23, because we were reading 22, explains this even further. Now, chapter Jeremiah 23 says, it goes, woe be unto the pastors that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture with the Most High. Therefore, thus saith the Most High, Yah of Israel, against the pastors that feed my people, ye have scattered my flock and driven them away and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doing, saith the Most High. Now, and I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries, whether I have driven them, and will bring them again to their folds, and they shall be fruitful and increase. And I will set up shepherds over them, which shall feed them, and they shall fear no more, nor be dismayed. Neither shall they be lacking, saith the Most High. Now listen to this, okay? Listen to this. Behold, the day come, saith the Most High, that I will raise unto Dawid a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. In his day, Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely, and this is his name, whereby you shall call him, the Most High, our righteousness, or better known as Yahushua. So if they would have read a little bit further, it talks about them raising up a righteous seed. Now, if no seed was supposed to prosper, in the next verse, they talk about raising up a righteous seed. What on earth are they talking about? Okay? Now, So if the curses were on Judah, then how can there be a righteous branch? We're going to continue now, says Jeremiah 23:7. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Most High, that they shall no more say, the Most High liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. 23:8, but the Most High liveth, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country and from all countries whither I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. So here we can see that the curse was lifted, right, by the birth of Zerubbabel. But we get confusion. So this is what is used today to discredit the Messiah. It's like the false flag terror. It's like the modus operandi. You know, it's the modus operandi of Lucifer and the fallen ones. Because people always go back to this verse because they know that most people don't get it. And you can't get it if you don't know how to break down the names. You don't know that the message is there, but it's in the names. But if you don't understand the meaning of it, then you'll be like, oh, what is this? What's going on? Now, there's a lot more I can address in this topic, but I need to move on to my next discussion. If you want to know why Zerubbabel is in the genealogy of Shealtiel and not Padiah, okay, you have to do your own research, basically. You can start by understanding that Shealtiel died and his brother Padiah followed the traditions of Judah. And those traditions was to take his brother's wife and give him a son. And you can read that in 38:6. Now, this will explain why you don't see Padiah in the genealogy. Okay, it's a Hebrew thing, you know. Also, research the good figs and the bad figs found in Jeremiah 24. And you get a deeper insight to why the curses was placed on Jehoiakim and Jehoiakim. I'm sorry, Jeconiah and Jehoiakim. And this is when, you know, Jeremiah 22:29, it says, O earth, O earth, O earth, hear the words of the Most High. That means to literally pay attention. This was the prophecy of Zerubbabel being the first king of Judah to not physically be upon the throne of David. Okay? Now, this is true because after this, you had Babylon. Right? Then you had Persia. Then you had the Greeks. Then you had the Herodians. Then you had the Romans. And now we have the Ashkenazis. And all these people are on the throne. And, you know, Jeconiah was the last one to sit on the throne physically. Okay? To physically occupy the throne. But the Messiah, he needs no throne. Okay? Because the earth is his footstool. Okay? He don't need no throne. Okay, now, here are a few final points to think about. The key to understanding is in the names, right? Because the message to Israel is hidden in the names. This is why when you read about the persons in the Bible dictionary, they break down the meaning of the person's name first. You can also get a deeper meaning by understanding how a name is used. For example, Egypt. Now, when I found out that Egypt meant bondage, the last verse in Deuteronomy 28 had a whole new meaning. You know? Deuteronomy 28:68. And the Most High shall bring thee into Egypt again with ships by the way whereof I spake unto thee. Thou shalt see it no more again. And there ye shall be sold unto your enemies for bondmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you. And like I said before, do you need sheep? Do Do you need ships to go to Egypt from Israel? No, you don't. So, now, the true name is the key. Okay? The true name is the key. So, we can't say Jesus. We have to say Yahushua. Yahuwah. Yahuwah, the Savior. Okay? Yah, Savior. Now, here's something else to consider. Everything that you have been taught in the past has to be revisited because the teachers did not come from the Most High. These teachers came from themselves. Here's something else you have to consider. There are many books that are missing in scriptures. We know this because we read about them. So what was taken away from our understanding? And who took it away? Who decided that we did not need these books? Was it the kings of Judah? Or was it the kings of Israel? Was it the kings of Babylon? The kings of the Holy Roman Empire? The emperors? Who was it? Now, here's an example of the missing books. Okay, the Book of the Covenant, Exodus 24:7. Okay, it says, "And he took the Book of the Covenant and read in the audience of the people, and they said, all that the Most High has said will we do and be obedient." Have you heard of the Book of the Covenant? Gone. The Book of Nathan the Prophet, Chronicles 29:29. "Now the acts of Dawid the king, first and last, behold, they are written in the book of Samuel the seer, and the book of Nathan the prophet, and the book of Gad the seer." All three of those books, gone. Now let's try the New Testament. Epistle from Laodicea to the Colossians, Colossians 4:16. "And when this epistle is read among you, cause that it be read also in the church of the Laodiceans, and that you likewise read the epistle from Laodicea." Okay? Now, the book of Acts of Uzziah, 2 Chronicles 26:22. "Now the rest of the Acts of Uzziah, first and last, did Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, write." You know what I'm saying? So basically, just those are a few books that they mention but are gone. The book of the kings of Judah and the books of the kings of Israel. Now, because of the separate kingdoms, there are added stories we have not heard of. When I say the books have been corrupted, I do not mean that the words of the Most High, Yah, is corrupt. No, no, no. What I mean is that the hands of the Gentiles that have inserted Babel into the understanding is corrupt. So once we uproot Babel, we rediscover our understanding. So pretending that it does not exist is foolish. This is why I criticize present-day Christianity. Because when someone tells them they have been misled or lied to, they ignore you or do not listen. And because they do not listen, they do not have the ability to hear. And this is key, because they cannot hear the understanding of the word. The Most High is calling his people. Okay? He's calling his people. Listen to this verse. It says, "But ye believe not, because ye are not of my sheep, as I said unto you. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand." How can his sheep hear his voice if Babel is doing all the speaking? You know, I'll let you guys in on something. Now, this last part of this study is extremely powerful. Those that stayed with me are going to get a treat. Those that left, oh well. Now, this last thing, you know, when it comes to me, when it came to me to do this study, I had no clue what it was, what it would lead to. This last part I wrote out because I got inspired by the statement that I wrote. You know, I said, how can his sheep hear his voice if Babel is doing all the speaking? This was a question I had, so I wrote it out just like it sounds. Now, here is the answer to the question I had. Now, check this out. It's going to blow your mind, okay? Because I wrote this out. And as I was writing, I said, now, okay, anyway. Now, it started in Romans 10, verse 13. Now, like I said, I have different books. I have the 1611 Bible. I have different study Bibles, the Septuagint, and all these things. And sometimes they quote different verses, so I'm able to cross-reference them. All right? But they give you a lot of different choices to choose from. And these are the verses I've chosen, and it's really interesting. Now, here it goes. Okay, now it starts with Romans 10:13. A lot of you are familiar with this, so I'm going to read this, okay? And it says, for whosoever shall call upon the name of the Most High shall be saved. How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him of whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach except they be sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel of peace and bring glad tidings of good things. But they have not all obeyed the gospel. So Elias said, Lord, who hath believed our report? So then faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of the Most High. But I say, hence they not heard. Yes, verily their sounds went into all the heavens, and their words unto the earth, the ends of the world. But I say, did not Israel know? First Moses saith, I will provoke you to jealousy, but then that are not people, and by a foolish nation I will anger you. But Elias is very bold and saith, I was found of them that sought me not. I was made manifested of them that asked not of after me. Mm-hmm. After to Israel, he saith, all day long I have stretched forth my hand unto a disobedient and gainsaying people. All right. Now, after reading that verse, I was like, wow. But then I highlighted one thing in the verse. You know, it said, and how shall they preach except they be sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of them that preach the gospel of peace and bring glad tidings of all good things. Because that related to my question. I said, how can his sheep hear his voice if Babel is doing all the speaking? And it led me to that. But then this told me to go further. So it took me to Isaiah 52:7. And it says, how beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that brings good tidings, that publish peace, that bring in good tidings of good, that publishes salvation, that saith unto Zion, thy Yah reigneth. The watchman shall lift up thy voice, which the voice together shall they sing, for they shall see eye to eye when the Most High shall bring again Zion. Break forth into joy, sing together, ye wasteful places of Jerusalem, for the Most High has comforted his people, he hath redeemed Jerusalem. The Most High hath made bare his holy name in the eyes of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of Yahweh. Depart ye, go ye out from thence. Touch no unclean thing. Go ye out of the midst of her. Be ye clean that bear the vessels of the Most High. For ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight, for the Most High will go before you, and Yahweh of Israel will be your reward. Behold, my servants shall deal prudently. He shall be exalted and extolled, and be very high. As many were astonished or ascertained as thee, his visage was so marred more than any man, and his form more than the sons of men. So shall he sprinkle many nations. The king shall shut their mouths at him. For there which had not been sold, them shall they see, and that which they had not heard shall they consider. Okay, now, I read that. And I was like, okay, I understand the two matching verses. You know, how beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of the high that brings good tidings, that publishes peace, that brings good things. You know, because it says how beautiful are in Romans 10:15, how beautiful are the feet of the them that preaches the good tidings of peace. You know, and I said, okay, wow, so the Most High is actually talking to me here. He's bringing me to these verses. But it doesn't stop there. It says, now, go to Joel 2, and it reads. Now, this is where it gets amazing, because it lays out the future. And it reads, blow ye trumpets in Zion, and sound an alarm in the holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of Yah cometh. For it is nigh at hand, a day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds, a thick darkness as the morning spread upon the mountains, a great people and a strong. There hath not been ever like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. A fire devoureth before them, and beheld them a flame burneth. The land is as the garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolation wilderness. Ye and nothing shall escape them. The appearance of them is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen, so shall they run. Like the noise of chariots on the top of mountains shall they leap, like the noise of a flame of fire that devoureth the stubble, as a strong people set in a battle array. Before their face the people shall be much pained, all faces shall gather blackness. They shall run like mighty men. They shall climb the walls like men of war. And they shall march every one on his way. And they shall not break their ranks. Neither shall one thrust another. They shall walk every one in his path. And when they fall upon the sword, they shall not be wounded. They shall run to and fro in the city. They shall run upon the walls. They shall climb up upon the houses. They shall enter in at the windows like a thief. The earth shall quake before them. The heavens shall tremble. The sun and the moon shall be dark. And the stars shall withhold their shining. And Yahweh shall utter his voice before his army. for his camp is very high, for he is strong that executeth his word. For the day of Yahweh is great and very trembling, and who can abide it? Now, I was like, whoa. Could this be talking about us, the Hebrew Israelites? You know what I'm saying? We have been put down so much. We have been called Negroes and spooks and goons and, you know, one-third human so much that I look at this verse and I'm like, no way. No way. Okay? Joel 2:2. A day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains, a great people and a strong, there hath no been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. I was like, what? No. Joel 2:7. They shall run like mighty men. They shall climb the wall like men of war. They shall march everyone on his way, and they shall not break their ranks. I was like, nah, really? These people, are we these people? Is this us? Then a voice said, keep reading. Read to the end. So, the last verse of chapter 2, I read, because I was already done. Now, I went to the last verse. This is Joel 32, okay? And it says, and it shall come to pass that whoever shall call on the name of the Most High shall be delivered. From in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as the Most High hath said, and in the remnant whom the Most High shall call. Now, many of you don't understand what I just done, but I'm going to break it down for you. You see, this verse, Joel 32, leads us back to Romans 10:13, right where I began. This verse speaks about deliverance, okay? The Most High shall be delivered, for in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance. This leads me back to Padiah. Remember? Padiah, Yah's ransom. Okay? Gets better. This verse breaks down remnant. As the Most High hath said, and in the remnant whom the Most High shall call. This leads me back to Cananiah, Yah sustained. The remnant he sustained in Babylon. Okay? So, that last verse, Joel 32, tied this whole lesson together and led me back to Romans 10:13, where I started with the question. Okay? The question was, how can his sheep hear his voice if Babel is doing all the talking? If Babel is doing all the speaking, I said this. And it led me all the way. And it told me, it said, blow ye the trumpets in Zion. Do yourself a favor. Read Joel 2:1. If you are a Hebrew Israelite, and understand, this is talking about you. It's talking about you. Now, I had this happen to me before. When I thought about a topic and someone would mention it, you know, this happens. Or I would think about something that, you know, and then it would happen. But I never had it like this, you know, because everything lined up perfectly. And I had no clue what I was doing. All right. Now, so in closing, I just want to I want to speak to Israel. Okay. No matter what you do, understand, you are the apple of the Most High's eye. No matter how they try to hide the truth, change the names, scatter the sheep, confuse with Babel, we are the apple of the eyes of the Most High. And for the Gentiles, I want you to listen up. In this verse it says, "And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and they shall be one fold and one shepherd. Therefore doeth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man take it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received from my Father." And if you missed that, I'm saying that the Gentiles, we cannot be arguing at the Gentiles, saying that they're like the root of evil and all this craziness when we hear these brothers talking on YouTube and stuff. And understand that it says that the other sheep, okay, I have which are not this fold, then also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there they shall be one fold with one shepherd. If you're listening to my voice right now, then you could be that sheep, okay? Now, this last one, this message to the Hebrews. Hebrew Israelite that was sold on the slave ships, lynched, and have been told that you are nothing and treated the same. This is for you. Zechariah 27. "Delivereth thy, O Zion, that dwelleth with the daughters of Babylon. For thus saith the Most High of hosts, after the glory hath he sent me unto the nations which spoiled you, for he that touches you touches the apple of his eye. For behold, I will shake my hand upon them, and they shall be a spoil to their servants, and ye shall know that the Most High of hosts have sent me. Sing and rejoice, O daughters of Zion, for lo, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee with the Most High. And many nations shall be joined to the Most High in that day, and shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee. And thou shalt know that the Most High of hosts have sent me unto thee. And the Most High shall inherit Yehuda, his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. Be silent, O all flesh, before the Most High, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation." Okay. Now, if you want to call, the number is 347-826-9484. And if you are in the chat room, you could, you know, you guys can have a chat there. What is the real name of God? What do you think it is, Crazy C? You know, that's a simple question to find out. Do some research. Do some research. All right, now. Let me see. I am here. Okay, I was just reading the chat. Is there any questions in the chat room? Or would anybody like to call in? Oh, you're asking me, what is the name? Look it up. Yahuwah. Yahuwah. How many times did I say it? Yahuwah. Did I stutter? All right. Now, in closing, when I first opened this program, I talked about the Council of Nicaea. The reason why this was, I wanted to emphasize this, is because I wanted you to understand the root of the controversy, okay? And the root of the controversy is based on the fact that the demons got into the congregation, and they always been there along. You know, when the Hebrew Israelites became, had the understanding of Yahushua, when they had the understanding of Yahushua, and they got the lessons from Yahushua, okay, it became a new doctrine, but that new doctrine was the continuation of the story. Because the so-called Jewish religion is not a religion, okay? It is a history. It's a history of events. These history of events are not supposed to be followed religiously. Now, of course, we have the Sabbaths and then we have the different rituals, but the calendar has been changed so many times that no one knows when those rituals are. The Hebrews have been scattered. The priests were taken from that position. The Levites were taken away, who were supposed to be in charge of these events. And these events were meant for us to be reminded, okay, we're supposed to be reminded of the covenant. Now, I read about how they took away the book of the covenant. The book of the covenant was lost, but this was lost even before Babylon. So we neglected that. We neglected that. Who took the book? But you have to understand now, if the Most High has chosen a people, and the duty of these people is to bring forth the word of the Most High, of course they're going to be a target, okay? Of course you're going to have them as a target. So you have to deal with the fallen angels. You have to deal with Lucifer. And as I broke down last week, the fallen angels have their children, the demonic spirits. And the demonic spirits, you know, they are bound to the earth. Bound to the earth means that, you know, they don't, when they don't die and go like to heaven. Their spirits are stuck on the earth. And when they say bound to the earth, understand that man is earth. So they're bound to you. Okay? They have to dwell inside of you. So all these demons that are running around are dwelling inside of human beings, earth, earthly vessels, okay? Earthly vessels, all right? Now, what we have to understand is that we have to pay attention to the spiritual aspects of this study. Because the spiritual aspects of this study is the other half of the story. And when we ignore the fact of the fallen angels or the demonic spirits, then they're winning. because they win in the fact that they can hide and manipulate and do things behind the backs of men. And by me exposing this, you know, it kind of eliminates most of their power, because they cannot live in light. They can only live in darkness. Okay? And if most people don't believe in demons, cool. Just because you don't believe in something doesn't mean it exists. Everybody heard that before, but you need to take that literally. Just because you don't believe in something does not mean that it doesn't exist. Now, I say that because when I talk about the Council of Nicaea, you had the demonic forces that were already working. You understand that this Protestant thing, this separation between Catholicism and the Protestant movement, is only a duplication of what happened around the 2nd century AD. It happened around the 2nd century AD because you still had a split, but this time it was in reverse. Before it was Catholicism and then the Protestant movement. Now it's like the Protestant movement, but then it turned to Catholicism because they said we need to tie this all in under one roof. Now, when they tied it into one roof, you still had the Arian schools and the other schools, the Milesian schools and the Gnostics and all these. They went underground because they knew that if they were to show their faith, they would be killed. All right, they'd be purged out. And this is how the occult schools started. Now, these occult schools lasted all the way until the Protestant movement. Now, when the Protestant movement happened, it's not like it just came out of nowhere. They were burning people back in the 1300s. You know, Wycliffe Bibles and all, they were burning people back then. There has always been this element, but it hasn't been powerful. And like I explained last week, the Protestant movement is based on Arianism, Gnosticism, all these hidden knowledges that believed a separate doctrine. And then when Henry VIII came, like I stated last week, he gave power to the movement, and then it was able to, you know, overcome the oppressive force of the Catholic Church. But the root of Protestant movement is still derives of demonic forces. It's an occult movement. Now, people get offended by that. And I say, okay, you may have some groups that were trying to be true, but if you're not calling on the name of Yahushua, okay, and calling on Yahuwah, Yah, then you're using pagan names like God and Jesus. Like I said before, the meaning is in the name. Ahayah. Ashir Ahayah. I am that I am. I am that exist. I am everything. I am everything. I am the creator. The name of the Most High has so many meanings. You cannot settle on one meaning. You can't put it in a box. It is magnificent. So, these movements, some of them had a taste of the truth, but they did not have the truth. And now what's happening is we're actually moving towards a time where it's all coming together. The Hebrew Israelites are waking up. You got all these crazy names you haven't heard of before. You got these different words coming out. People are starting to get in touch with the Hebrew language. The Hebrew language is powerful. It's a powerful language because that language is speaking in the words of the Most High. That's the language that the Most High gave to us to speak. Of course, they had to wipe it out and replace it with the Babylonian language. Those people aren't speaking Hebrew. They're speaking Yiddish. There ain't no power in Yiddish. There's no power in that. That's all about the Kabbalah. Okay? Mysticism. Now, think about it. You have the power of the Most High, or you have the Kabbalah power. The Kabbalah power derives from demonic forces, Platonism, all the Persian Egyptology, all the mystery gods. That's the power of the Kabbalah. Okay, the Most High is the creator of everything. And the language of the Hebrews is the language of the power of the Most High. Okay? Okay. I'm going to sign out because I'm going to maybe do a study on the Egyptian religion. But I have to, you know, write a lot of stuff up, and I really don't have a lot of time, but I really do need to get this other broadcast out. And if I do change it, then you'll see it on the you'll see it on the board. But thank you so much for coming. I will have this uploaded on my site soon, and peace to everyone. All right, bye.
And this is the poem that I always close every reading of mine. After this poem, I read no more. Strong men. Strong men. The strong men keep coming on. Carl Sandburg. They dragged you from homeland. They chained you in coffles. They huddled you, spoon fashion, in filthy hatches. They sold you to give a few gentlemen ease. They broke you in like oxen, they scourged you, they branded you, they made your women breeders, they swelled your numbers with bastards, they taught you the religion they disgraced. You sang, keep inching along like a poet's worm. You sang, by and by I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. You sang, walk together, chillin'. Don't you get weary. The strong men keep a-coming on, the strong men get stronger. They point with pride to the road you built for them. They ride in comfort over the rails you laid for them. They put hammers in your hands and said, drive so much before sundown. You sang, ain't no hammer in this land. Strikes like mine, baby, strikes like mine. They cooked you in their kitchen, they penned you in their factories. They gave you the jobs that they were too good for. They tried to guarantee happiness to themselves by shunting dirt and misery to you. You sang, me and my baby gonna shine, shine, me and my baby gonna shine. The strong men keep a-coming on, the strong men get stronger. They bought off some of your leaders. You stumbled, as blind men will. They coaxed you unwontedly soft-voiced. You followed away, then laughed as usual. They heard the laugh and wondered, uncomfortable, unadmitting a deeper terror. The strong men keep a-coming on, getting stronger. What from the slums where they have hemmed you? What from the tiny huts they could not keep from you? What reaches them, making them ill at ease, fearful? Today they shout prohibitions at you. Thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that, reserved for whites only. You laugh. One thing they cannot prohibit, the strong men coming on, the strong men getting stronger, strong men stronger.